Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to celebrate a great birthday of a singular teacher, though the next book that I'm almost finished writing is called Unique, Not Alone. So he is unique, but fortunately, many great teachers are with us now, have been, and I think many of us are getting better at finding them, also holding them to task, because some of them tend to develop unevenly. But one of the great things about Rudolf Steiner is we don't have to apologize. Well, he's really great, except we do have this little problem. I don't think he has so many problems that we have to apologize for. And we have, of course, amazing gifts from him, the foremost being himself. He is a gift from the spiritual world, and as a result of his previous lives, if you subscribe to that, as I do. And as he did, certainly. So one of the works of Rudolf Steiner was, and I even think is, but I don't know how to think is, maybe you do, you can help me, that is to say, when I don't want to do something, and I know I should, and it's for anthroposophy or something, well, these people are driving me crazy, but I'll do it for Rudolf Steiner. So as soon as I say that, I don't really know what I'm talking about. And so maybe you do. But I say it deliberately, hoping that I will find out what I mean, because I don't know so much. So in other words, I don't know very clearly how works of Rudolf Steiner or work of Rudolf Steiner continues, except by us. I don't think it's only by us, but the rest of the part I don't know very well. The part I do know pretty well is the work that many, many people are doing who are influenced by Rudolf Steiner. Some of them call themselves anthroposophists, but surely not all, and perhaps not even most. I'm constantly meeting people who are working within the framework of Rudolf Steiner's work, his thought, his mission, his influence, his spirit, and who don't particularly identify with the work as a movement or as a society. That seems to be a bit of a problem. On the other hand, wonderful things are happening, and I don't think he was particularly desperate for credit. I think he was desperate to help humanity, and that seems to be going better and better while the world is, in some respects, getting worse and worse. kind of funny, not so funny. So I'd like to say that one of the major works of Rudolf Steiner is to enable us, encourage us, to think on multiple levels, to feel on multiple levels, to act on multiple levels. So just for a start, a little story that Thomas Berry used to tell. I don't know if it was original with him, but he told it often. And I always think of it when I think of the story, I think of him, and vice versa. So you may have heard it. There's a town where they're building a cathedral, and a person asks the person carrying, or actually wheeling, some very large stones, what are you doing? And the person says, I'm bringing these stones over there to that part of the wall that's not finished. And then the next person, what are you doing? And we're really trying to build this cathedral. And then it actually could be dragged out 4 or 5 levels, I'll just do 3. Then the next person is asked, and that person says, we're building a civilization. Now they were the same activities. One was moving a stone, one was building a cathedral, one was, in a certain sense, creating, sustaining, renewing a civilization. And it's a good story for an introduction to Rudolf Steiner, because so many activities that he did were very local. They were quite insignificant in some respects. And other activities were vast and tremendous and historical, and he did them all with the exact same consciousness. Everything counts. And everything counts because whatever level you're on, it's significant on another level. A higher, deeper, wider, further advanced level or further back level. So all the directions count. And all the levels of meaning count and are preserved in ways that are quite mysterious, but according to Rudolf Steiner, very real. Terribly real and consequential. Okay, so what I would like to do is say first a little bit about one of the important teachings of Rudolf Steiner is that the human being has at least four levels, dimensions, I guess levels is okay, it's not so great, that we need to be aware of, and also to discipline, to cultivate, to try to improve. So he worked very hard on the physical level. He was very concerned with the earth, with the soil, with food, with the human body, with health, medicines, and also with diagnosis of illnesses. So people often refer to him as an Austrian mystic, and that's fine in the sense that he was on a first-name basis with the spiritual world, as mystics are, and that's really important and rare and special, and so that's true. However, he was a mystic with a deep attention, devotion to everything physical, to the bones, the human skeleton, to every part of the physical world seemed to him urgent, both because it is sacred and because it manifests higher levels. So he's not one of these dualists, you know, where the spiritual is there, and the earthly is there, and the earthly is not so great, and you just sort of go through it on the way to the spiritual. The spiritual, he's technically a panentheist. That is to say, the spiritual is throughout the physical, the earthly, all the way into the earth, and then all these different levels, they're all important. So when he was looking around at the suffering of humanity, he could see that one of the ways or levels for our suffering is at the physical level. We're not sufficiently intimate with the physical world. That, of course, is a 400-year process from the great triumph of modern science beginning 16th and 17th century. Actually, it goes back to Thomas Aquinas, but that's a longer story. In any case, he could see how this great achievement of the modern West in relation to the natural world had this downside of separating us from an enchanted universe, or the downside being the disenchantment of the universe. So he is on that line of people like Aquinas, but also Goethe, and many others who are trying to help us to re-enchant the physical world. So people think of him as a thinker, and that's true, but the thoughts that he wants us to have at this physical level are the thoughts of love for the physical world, including the human body and its needs and its pain and how to make it an instrument of the divine. So he is deeply devotional and wise and a real researcher at the physical level. So that's the first of the four levels that Steiner works with, and he gives us various therapeutic activities and arts that are especially good for the human being, for the body, which is has a hard challenge of coming into a world in which science is so powerful that it removes us to some extent, not necessarily, but generally removes us from the spirit which is throughout us. If we could just attend to it and be awake in ways that are necessary. Now, he is unusual in that he also develops another level of the human being and the world that we live in. Namely, it's what he calls the etheric. Many people call it the subtle body, the interior life body. And he was especially good at studying and helping people to see, to experience this subtle body, the body which separates a living seed from a plastic seed. So the living bone from a bone that of a deceased person, that's like chalk. What is that? What is it that makes, that enables the plant to grow and to regenerate? What is that? What is it that enables, as you know, like Rupert Sheldrake's amazing research about the animal world and how we can watch them be attuned to human life and activities. Sheldrake calls it a morphic field, and Steiner calls it an etheric body, which is why, so if you're doing your rhythmy, you're using your body, but it's really the subtle body that's moving. So, and you can see behind you, if you've activated your etheric sight. It's etheric sight is the sight of Mary Magdalene, right? Master. Nobody else could say master because they couldn't see anything that would be called master. But she had etheric sight, so she could say, she didn't get it quite right. But she thought he was a gardener at first. Then she says, master. So etheric is very hard to get it right. You have to see into the physical world. But it is a real reality. It is a real level of life, of pulsing, throbbing, forming. It's the level that the sculptor tries to make with the clay, which is earth and water, becoming alive and breathing. And, you know, Theodore Spence, a book, wonderful book, about living forms. So the etheric is real, and those of us who aren't attuned to it, we're missing out on this inner reality of the life dimension and how important it is to have this as part of our life and free us from some of the shadow side of contemporary science, which claims that the earth is dead and meaningless. Not all scientists say that, but alas, the foremost scientist, Dr. Hawking, does think that the world is pretty dead. And not only is Dawkins and a lot of others, really brilliant, powerful, important scientists, but they don't have that etheric. And so people who are working with the dying need to be aware of that etheric dimension. And we need to have spaces that, we need to treat space in such a way the etheric is healthy, especially for the elderly and the dying. They need to be in space where that is alive and in relation to their etheric bodies. Much more could be said. And then Rudolf Steiner, as a, it seems to me, quite a wonderful soul, a person of vast affection, terribly serious man, we grant, but a man of great affection, great love, and dedication too many people around him, you know, give me, I need, doctor, tell me what should I do, and I want, etc. But he did attend to the people around him, but he also attended to larger frameworks, and all of this is on the astral, the soul level. He had an enormous soul that was kind of a masterpiece of affection. Right? And also a gift at the soul level for language, for thinking, for imagination, which is at that soul level. And he gives us therapies, lots of them, for developing the kind of thinking which is imaginative and not sort of cramped into either or kind of thinking. And rather, but the both and the celebration of multiple levels and multiple directionality. He's actually a postmodern thinker, if you know that term, a term that's used for people who say there's no one true perspective. There's always multiple perspectives. Stein is fine with that. He thinks there are multiple perspectives, but he doesn't think that they're therefore unimportant. They are important and they're true, but they're multiple. Very complex world that he understands and that he exhibits or manifests. Okay, and now, unlike that sort of the top of what most people talk about, including Jung, who is sort of the next greatest spiritual psychologist of our time. Jung, of course, goes very, very deep, and if you know the Red Book, he goes even deeper than you thought, and it's quite wonderful, and we should all be indebted to Jung, but I think it's true, and I'm in a department of Jungian, so this is a kind of a hot topic, but I think it's true that Steiner goes another step past Jung, which is true. That is to say, he is talking about a level or a reality, a dimension of the human being, which is the I. And this I is, anthroposophists call it individuality. I don't know if that's a great word, but it's they're trying to talk about the I, the self, that is reborn. Not everybody can go there, but more and more people can go there, partly as a result of the Hindu and Buddhist contributions to our culture in the last 100 years or so. But those of you who can go there, you can now begin to think about that this life of yours, as important and interesting as it is to you, and perhaps to some other people, we hope so, this life is itself a product of multiple other lives in which you have developed capabilities and some limitations. You're a package deal, and you've entered into this world with its serious challenges, and your children more so, and your grandchildren more so than that, entering into a world with tremendous challenges, and this apparently is appropriate for you. You should have done this. It was your time to come to learn new skills, try out old capacities, meet challenges, and also to catch up with those other individualities with whom you have a karmic destiny, with whom you have a meaningful, deep relationship, deeper than your social life. So that there may be people in your family or in your social relationships with whom you feel this, not always pleasant, but you do feel this deep connectivity. Like, this person is really a pain, and somehow it's not just in my face, but he or she is in my life in a way that, you know, I wouldn't have chosen, but somehow it doesn't seem right to be done with it. This feels a lot like this karmic relationship that has to do with your I, not just with your social life, with your with your circumstantial life, where you work, or someone who happens to be in your family, but something deeper than that, something that you came to work out. So this is the whole karmic realm that Steiner, I think, now I really do want to say uniquely, I've read almost the whole of the Dalai Lama, who of course is in the Buddhist tradition, and there is a rebirth, but the Dalai Lama has not done this research. Hardly anybody has. But Rudolf Steiner actually names names, actually says this is who that person was. And if you check this out, you'll see. Well, we can't check it out very well, but we can read him and say, I never thought of that. That's really interesting. Now, you could take it as information, but now I'm shifting, I hope you can tell, to a little bit working with the work, all right? So one of the most important tasks, which deserves the word work, is being awake to our karma. This is quite different than most spiritual teachings. Sri Aurobindo has it. Some other people have some of it. But Rudolf Steiner really made it. It's a wonderful book by Thomas Meyer on the core of Rudolf Steiner's mission, which is about his teaching and his guiding people to pay attention. That's all he's saying. You don't have to get it exactly right, and you're probably not going to, but to pay attention to what Jung calls synchronicities. Those moments in our life when the universe, whatever that means, when some set of deep forces, developments, suggestions, psst, like that, listen, like an angelic kind of voice, though, how you figure that, because angels don't have voices, so you have to, be a little metaphorical about it. But that say, listen, this is a revelation. This is a moment. This is you. This is the you that you came to be, and not the you that you've been sort of messing around with. This is where you should be. This is the relationship you should make. Or end, this is the career you should have, even though it may not be so easy or pleasant or whatever. This really is you. Look at that. Listen. And it's not just look, it's listen. So Rudolf Steiner is a shower. Right? He tries to lead us such ways that we can look and say, yeah, actually, I don't know how to explain this, but somehow I get this feeling that this is where I should be, how I should be, what I should do. So it's this quite wonderful teacher in the area of our aspiration and our discovery. Our aspiration and our discovery of who I am, which means, of course, my tasks, what I should do, and who I should be with. Who are my people? But not the people who serve me, who are the people I've come to serve, so that I could then develop that compassion, which is surely the great task of the time, which is why one of the reasons we love the Dalai Lama so much, because he is the total beautiful embodiment of compassion. Wisdom too, but compassion is so rare. Okay, so then this, John mentioned this ambiguous title, the work of Rudolf Steiner in the world today raises a question whether Rudolf Steiner is dealing with the world today. Okay, so I don't know. There may be people here who think they do. That's good. I'll listen. But I don't know. So what is from him here today? Well, there are books, maybe too many of them. My good friend Mark Finzer once made that remark. Maybe we'd be better off if we had fewer books. Yeah, because we're so dependent on the books that, you know, we don't. It's a little bit overwhelming. No, it's very overwhelming. And we sometimes can't really do something new because we're so busy. We're just getting started absorbing. It's the end of life, and we're still getting started absorbing all this knowledge. But we don't have to be overwhelmed, and we can then not say, I must know what's in the books, though we should know some of what's in some of the books. We should, I think, try to take seriously the idea that a teacher, a high spiritual teacher, not the only one, but a very high one, comes to help us. This is the avatar model in the Indian tradition. You know, when you switch traditions, you can't use the same words very well. Not a good idea. There's always a little distortion there. But it does seem that these really great souls come to help in ways that we really need. So we need to be reconnected with the earth and with our inner life. We need to be connected with the whole of the globe, the whole human family, and to know what is human as distinct from what is vegetable or mechanical, and to know about the dignity of life, which doesn't make us then, you know, make dogmas and rules, but it makes us, we hope, sensitive. So here's a soul who, and just think about this, you know, the series, you want to say, who do I have to look to? Well, consider that at age, what is the world like? What is reality? That there's a woman who commits suicide, and she's, as I imagine, as I think about it, not only through Steiner, but from other spiritual teachers, when a person commits suicide and goes to the spiritual world, there is a little bit of an adjustment that needs to go on. They're not quite expected. Okay? Maybe it's a horror, maybe it's not such a big horror, I don't know. But there's something needs to happen. So there, the day after she commits suicide, she's in, it's not a world as in a place, but it's a world as in a realm, a sphere, a kind of consciousness. And so she has no body. So she can't, you know, do an email, she can't speak, she can't, you know, etc. But she's looking for help. So what is the world like that when she looks for help from this spiritual state, she sees a soul that, as I think of it, is very large, very pure, and very wise, not on the basis of 5 years, or six and a half, but on the basis of a previous life such that he came in with these, with this vast soul. Okay? Now we can skip over, and the next moment I want to bring to your attention is, in a certain sense, his first work. That was already his first work, namely being compassionate to a person who needed help. Right? So she asks him for help, and then disappears. This is his autobiography. Now the next time he meets someone of great significance is also the beginning of a work. He meets an herb gatherer, Felix Gogutsky, a real shaman. Rudolf Steiner is very shamanic. Those of you who are not too happy with the modern world, and you're tempted toward shamanism, Rudolf Steiner is the shaman, except he's also a world-class physicist, chemist, biologist, doctor, etc. Okay, so he meets the herb gatherer, and now you have to say, what is the world like that this man can see the healing powers in plants? So there are illnesses that we have, and more that we have, for which we need certain kinds of subtle remedies. And Felix would bring his herbs into Vienna to sell them to apothecaries for people who are alert to the subtle powers of these healing. This is very like Dr. Edward Bach, not Bach, but Bach, he's English, who went to Wales and experienced the healing powers of the wildflowers, the dew in wildflowers, which he then, classified, we can all buy them in Whole Foods, and they're very wonderful. So what is the world like that he could see that? We can't, most of us, I wouldn't say no one can, but I can't, see these things, but he could see those. And that's the beginning of a second work of Rudolf Steiner. The first one, helping a person in need, which he did all of his life. Sometimes single, sometimes group, sometimes, I think, certainly the whole Western world, if not the whole humanity. So he then tries to bring to our attention this task, which we have as work, to find those healing powers for the kind of illnesses we have that are ours by virtue of living in a world where so little meaning is pre-established, and where it is so hard to sustain meaning against powerful forces, which he calls Lucifer and Ahriman, powerful forces against personal meaning, against interior meaning. Ahriman wants us to think that everything is on the surface. So if you say to me in the elevator, we only have 23 floors, I'm going pretty fast, so what's the deal with Steiner? I could say, the deal with Steiner is to try to live with a conscious awareness that we are more connected than our paradigm says we are. Paradigm, framework, way of seeing, thinking. So that, in a certain sense, that's the work. The work is to be more aware than we would otherwise be of how connected we are to depth, to extent, and then to verticality. In the vertical realm, he says, there are angels. Well, mostly we know angels from the Renaissance, a beautiful art, but his deal is, no, there are angels in your life, and that is also the work, to be alert to angels. That's kind of, it's pre-modern. It's not modern. Whether it'll be post-modern, I don't know. There are lots of angels, sort of more in our literature than in the past, but it's still a big deal to say in polite society, my angel. I mean, maybe you can get away with it, I don't know. But it's not easy. Okay. So, but he's saying, look, the spirit, there is horizontality, there is depth, there's also verticality. There are angels, and they are paying attention to us. I feel sorry for angels. I think they have the most boring job. They are watching our petty little grievances and our little revenges and our little mistakes and, oh my goodness. I mean, it is like watching, you know, an addicted person doing the same thing over and over and over again, each time with the same excuse, but not hoping not to get caught. I mean, there we are, and the angel is watching us. I think, oh, I really feel sorry for you. Okay. So, I mean, most of us can hide most of what we do from most of the people most of the time. But apparently, the angels are always watching. Well, more so from 0 to 27. But still, after that, apparently, they seem to know what's going on. Not only that, but there are souls. There are deceased persons who are in a spiritual realm. And Rudolf Steiner, if you want to say, okay, another elevator, another person wants to deal with Steiner, I would say the deal with Steiner is pay attention to the dead. Which is, I think, we sort of know about, even if you don't have a spiritual teaching or teacher or path or community or whatever. Certainly when a person dies, we know that there's more going on than our paradigm. And usually when someone dies, the people you're close to make statements they don't make any other time. Somehow, I know he's here. I experienced, I heard something. It's not over. Whether you do the life after life literature, Raymond Moody and Kubler-Ross and those people, or some other source, your own life, you somehow know that the dead are not as dead as our language suggests. The scientist says, that's right. They are the so-called dead, they are the living. So part of the work that Rudolf Steiner brought to the West was, and is, pay attention to the dead because they depend on you to read to them, to speak to them, to carry them in your heart, to say, we were and we are bonded in love. I send you my thoughts. I don't send you my body, but I send you my spiritual self. I send you my thoughts. I send you my aspirations. I send you my pain that I miss you. And I send you my love. And then the deceased person, according to the beautiful prayer of by Rudolf Steiner, right, the first large part, and then a response. And then we imagine the deceased person saying, I am awakened by you. Here I am. I'm in another state. And I'm trying to be awake, and I'm trying to go on this journey, and I'm having a hard time, thank you, for sending me, it's very, very angelic, it's a kind of angelic gesture, you know, it's kind of a eurythmic kind of thing. So that's part of the work. Okay, now, then, another part of the work, of which RSF is a significant example, is to do some part of what Rudolf Steiner started or suggested or just gave hints, so to do that work institutionally as a group with setting ourselves some tasks. Let's accomplish this. Let's figure out what's going wrong with money. Too few people have too much, too many people have too little, and too many people even who have the right amount don't quite know how to deal with it. And many people wind up owned by it or owned by the desire for it, both of which are owned and not so good. Okay? How can we deal with that? So then people get together and they think, they read some books by Steiner but others, they have experience and they make a foundation to deal with money. Other people read Steiner's books about the soil in 1923, which was already pretty tired. This is before refrigeration, before fertilizers. Already the soil is too tired. They said, Steiner, why can't we do what you do? Which is work 23 hours a day and meet every single person in their own subjective state. Why can't we do that? And he said, well, one of the reasons, in addition to the fact that you weren't so-and-so-and-so-and-so in your last life, and you didn't come with all that much. He never said that. But he did say, you might have some catching up to do. Why don't you try this? He then said, well, the soil is too weak. So then people get together, they make a farm, and they experiment, and they start the special magical beverages for that need that the earth wants to drink. And then instead of having gray leaves, we have green leaves and healthy food. All right, and also, of course, revitalizes the soil. So this is Steiner attending to the physical with a keen eye for the reality of the etheric. It's beautiful, okay? And then we get together and we say, well, you know, we have all these religions and they're making these claims and some of them are killing each other. And who knows what's right? And so we get together and we study those things. And then some of those priests and seminarians went to Steiner and said, we need help. And so he then said, well, I will bring some sacraments from the spiritual world where they exist. Lots of stuff in the spiritual world, just need to access. I'll bring the sacraments for you. And he then told these sacraments to these people, who then could make an institution for people looking for a more esoteric kind of secret kind of the revelations below the revelations or higher than the ordinary or just deep, and also with more freedom and democracy than in some religions. So he then he goes to the doctor. This is important. He did not go to them. One of the rules for esoteric, that is to say a teacher of secrets, spiritual secrets, like Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky, HPB, is that it's part of the discipline to wait to be asked, what does the community need? So a group of doctors go, we say we need help. So then he does some diagnoses and some prescriptions. And then a mother brings a 13-year-old daughter who's looking for a more spiritual, meaningful kind of dance. So he then works with this girl to show her movements which will express not just the beauty of the body, important as it is, okay, we all love Bill T. Jones in the Harlem, etc., gorgeous, beautiful movements, but he says there's the etheric body needs to be expressed. So then he creates a whole new art form. I think the only new art form of the 20th century, certainly the only art form that is beautiful and therapeutic, all right, and worthy to be in schools throughout the world, and fortunately in some schools. Okay, so all of these are works that happen, are happening all over the world in institutions. So then, for those of you who don't know this, there's a large movement of people in institutions and organizations and initiatives in America. There are about 500 of them, with a small number of people belonging to the society. So lots of people are a little bit on the, you know, sort of one stage of remove or two stages of remove, and that's good. I'm good for them if that's where they should be. And then, in addition to those large movements, some of which are trace themselves to Steiner, I suffer a little bit, I confess, when there's things that come right out of anthroposophy and there's no acknowledgement. This is not fair because it's very hard to be Rudolf Steiner and saying things that are not against, that are against the paradigm, that work. If he's saying something that's against the paradigm and it works, he should get credit. And people then should be able to see that there's limitations of the paradigm. It's not just for him because we love him. We do. But it's that we need better examples of the non-likely proving to be real and true and efficacious. We all need this. We need the Dalai Lama to make progress with the People's Republic. We don't want him to die feeling he's a failure. A 65-year experiment that didn't work. 65, yeah. Okay. So therefore, we get together and we say, in addition to all the stuff that's going on from all the people using Steiner and without acknowledgement, there are some of us are going to do some work and we're going to say, this comes from Steiner. Take a look. Does it work? Okay. Then pay attention to what's behind it. Okay? And behind that is not just a good idea, but a high being. A being who came with the job given to him by another high being called the Master to bring a major critique into the West for its faulty thinking, and to reintroduce karma and rebirth. Okay? So when we get the experience of a rebirth, all right, or some meaningful way of thinking about multi-lives, and we say, thank you, Rudolf Steiner, that's a great gift you brought us. Because I didn't want to really become a Hindu or a Buddhist, but I do want this idea that one life is not meaningful enough. We do need to understand, you know, the premature deaths and the long dying and the horrible, the sex slaves, and the people dying in horrible poverty, of whom there will be more, and more people dying of thirst in the 21st century. How do we deal with this? And Rudolf Steiner says, well, it's horrible, and also it's a larger drama. You're looking at an act, and you need to look at the whole, etc., whatever metaphor you want. Okay. So then, in addition to the movement, we have institutions like RSF, all right, like the society, like GoFarms, like Waldo schools that are explicitly related to Rudolf Steiner. I think that's very important to pay attention. If we have the blessing of being able to know a very, very high spiritual being, we should not be bored. We should pay attention. And if he tells you how, you know, to do a snack or fold a napkin for a nursery school, a high initiate pays attention to that. We should pay attention. Doesn't mean we can't change it, but we ought to pay attention respectfully. Okay, then in addition to that, there is a sort of mother of the whole deal that Rudolf Steiner founded very deliberately as a social and an esoteric institution, the General Anthroposophical Society. And this is, you know, this is both a wonderful institution because somebody should do this full time. It's also problematic because no institution is going to please everybody, least of all when it's in one place with all the other countries not in that place. It's an opportunity for misunderstanding, of which there have been many, and there will continue to be many. It's just a really hard job. I wish them well. It's just very hard. Any of us who have run an institution can get some idea of what it would be like to run an institution for a worldwide membership. Then in addition to that, there is also an inner core of that called the School of Spiritual Science, which Rudolf Steiner found expressly for this topic, for the work. The title doesn't say that much. But for deep esoteric research. What are the problems in the world, and what can we, with our knowledge, inspired, in some cases, literally, in some cases just suggestions, in some cases kind of that are removed, inspired by this teacher Rudolf Steiner, what could we learn that might be helpful in the sciences, in the arts, in architecture, in dramas? He wrote some dramas that where he's trying to track karma. Okay, they're not so great as dramas, but they're really great as wisdom. Right. So, like, lots of things are not so great for that, but really good for this. We have to, you know, discriminate that way. Now, here's a funny, no, not funny. Here's a hard, confusing kind of problem. You know, where is Rudolf Steiner? Who should be running this inner of this spiritual gift that he brought? Who knows enough to know how to do this? We all study these. You know, I was an expert. I'm still involved with Sri Aurobindo. After the death of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, who was there who could do that? Well, it was a big drop. Everybody knew that. And it's almost always a big drop from the pioneer to the next. Right. In this case, it's a huge drop. So it's going to take a lot of us, hundreds or thousands, to add up to the kind of a significance of a very high spiritual teacher who may or may not have returned. What? You know, I don't know. Maybe you don't. Okay. So now I want to conclude with one thought that is not very fashionable, but perhaps for that reason or perhaps some other reason might be important. Namely, that Rudolf Steiner, I think of almost above all, in addition to his wisdom and his amazing work and his relevance, I want to suggest that Rudolf Steiner is a sacrificial being. Rudolf Steiner suffered. He suffered the suffering of others. He could see around him that it was not going well. Many people were then and are now lost. This is his greatest work, was between these two wars, one of which basically decimated Europe and decimated the hope of progress. The idea that the world was getting better really tanked right there, 1918. It was very hard to believe in an evolution of consciousness. After that, you could only believe in change. And he could already see that the people opposing him were people with an agenda that was going to bring about, for the second time, the destruction of Europe. He could see all that. He could see our separation from the cosmos, from the earth, from each other, and from our interior life. He suffered that, which is why he took trains to the middle of the night to give another talk and another and meet this group and that group and help that group to not be so opposed to this group. So he shows up and he does a lecture on John's gospel in a living room in Hamburg to 9 people, because some of those people needed to hear that. Okay. So I want us to say that finally, as an answer to the question, the work continuing, I think the work is sacrifice. Not being an abused person. I mean totally free. Karmically appropriate sacrifice on behalf of others. Dalai Lama says, compassion begins with the nursing mother. I think we're going to need to be nursing mothers as the earth continues to burn. As more and more people miss each other in our understanding and in our necessary collaboration. He, I think, models that. He's like a really high spirit. Is this? He was not, burned in oil. He was burned and exhausted by the suffering of the people around him. And he met those needs in a way that was honest and selfless. So I think if we could maybe rescue this word sacrifice as not for sissies and losers, but for free, strong, free people who then affirm the aspirations, the needs of the other. Which, of course, is better for us, too. But that's not the motive. The motive is because we are all together in a really hard time in history. And Rudolf Steiner is sort of at the beginning of announcing that hard time, which will probably be with us for a long time. And so sacrifice such as he modeled in his life, I think we could take as an answer to the question, what is the work in the world today? The work is working the way he did. So thank you all for listening. I appreciate that.